Welcome back to Techtopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today's show, we have the ethical hacker, Ralph Eckamendia. This is Techtopia. This episode of Technotopia is sponsored by CheapTranscription.io. CheapTranscription offers 10 cent per minute transcriptions using our happy robots or 85 cents per minute using our human assistants. CheapTranscription.io is cheaper and faster than everyone else. CheapTranscription.io. This episode of Technotopia is brought to you by Typewriter.plus. Typewriter.plus is a full-service editorial agency that brings amazing editors from places like the New York Times and TechCrunch to work on your writing. Need a blog post, a white paper, a presentation? The Typewriter team can write or edit anything on nearly any topic. Visit them at typewriter.plus for a free quote. That's typewriter.plus, typewriter.plus. Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today we have Ralph Eckamendia, the ethical hacker. We last hung out in, I believe it was Cork. And you got a stomach flu or something. You feeling better?
Yeah, actually, well, you mentioned that because it wasn't even a stomach flu. I don't know what it was. All I know is I was very, very sick with a lot of the same kind of things. But fever, cough, all those type of things. And I was extremely sick for 2 days. Never even left the room. And then, of course, as scheduled, flew home, which was awful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's interesting. So that was what, February?
Yeah, yeah. So this is already going on.
Yeah. Anyway, so we have to talk about good, exciting things in technology. Tell me what's going to be amazing.
What's going to be amazing? Well. that's a good question right now. I think that this definitely is going to change things. We do them so many different ways. One of the opportunities for sure is for the fact that people will hopefully a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
The future holds the opposite of the past. If 2 day work week starts off. And that, the challenges, opportunities, challenges. So I think there's going to be that space. Zoom shot up in use, obviously, and also how that security issue. Security says there are new security issues. Because with such a large workforce, work from home, the way that remote environments are generally set up for a VPN work, regional use of VPN. But once you're on the network, once you're on the VPN, then you're not really protected the same ways that you would be if you're the kind of perimeter protection they have for internet, right? They don't really have inside, and so we're going to see a lot more. We're seeing that already. I hear about the news because all about physics, but there's going to be more as the news decides on that. Starts what's going to happen beyond that.
Yeah, so you're basically on that. You can basically attach like the, you can attack the edges of the network where all the, like the unprotected PCs are hanging out, right?
PCs and servers, all the applications. Mm-hmm. So, just like if you were at work, things you access from work would now be accessible to a list. So now we're. Click on numbers, apps, world, phishing, lots of that
I mean, we're constantly hearing about attacks. Marriott just lost, what was it, the 8 million records or something like that. We're constantly hearing about these attacks. Is it time to have a different view of private information? That if you steal my address, you're not really stealing anything per se, except for potentially my privacy and potentially identity theft. But is it a time to think about a different way of identifying ourselves?
Well, yes, that's a very good way to put it. In the data world, you're not stealing anything. Copying is different. And so it's not like I'm taking away your headphones. I just happen to, you know, copy them. And that's not exactly the way I thought of privacy. And the other issue is as we're dealing with using technology with regards to human safety and health, more and more, and we will be, much like you're seeing in China, you have to have a health check, app, and this thing every time. Patient, that is tied to health care. And we have never thought about, at least here in the States, databases being joined that way, where transport applications. So you're talking about it being shared more. And so what does that mean? You said to the ways that we think about privacy, identity, and so on. So we are going to have to just figure this out. This outbreak is actually caused, I said, the opportunities for us to fix that are broken or that we have just not deal with priority.
What does the world look like after this basically pandemic? What do you think changes primarily? Do you think we go back to, I mean, you said it, we don't go back to offices, but how are you going to change some guy's view that his employees aren't working hard enough unless they're sitting in front of a monitor in a cubicle?
Well, that, you know, that all depends on, you know, the specifics of that person's roles and responsibility. In general, within at least the technology sector, I think they're not going to have a choice to micromanage. That's going to be the output on purely the output of that. They do it in 2 hours. Yeah, you might be paying a salary of 8. But if they're good enough to do it too, no longer. You know, just sort of pissed off. Which I think that's one of the good things. So in other positions where, you know, call center and that sort of thing, and all of those systems already expect time. You know? Just like how we're recording right now, how we're streaming right now. That's all. All those technologies already exist. But, those type of, especially like I said, within the technology sector, that's definitely going to be one of the things. Good. We can be more productive. And the systems and technologies exist to allow it. So that's one of the good things.
So the idea of productivity in this new era basically says if I can do something in 2 hours, I should be given the day salary for that year, and I do the work that I need to do in 2 hours and go hang out. Is that the vision? Or, I mean, that's kind of the vision that the average work at home IT guy probably thinks in some cases.
Not even thinks, he does already to some degree, you know, like I said, it all depends on the workflow that certain corporations have and the responsibilities of those working within those corporations in these tech jobs. Because in some cases, the answer to that is yes, they will be able to go hang out, which, by the way, who knows what hanging out is going to look like in the future. But for others, not so much. I mean, you know, take take a development shop using Agile or any of these types of technology. Fine, you knock that out, but there's, you know, 8 little more notes behind that one. Keep going. Mm-hmm. So until you don't have any notes. The point is that they do that at 2 hours, you know, for 10 and not 40, then we'll have more time. It all depends on how we use technology to really manage productivity and define the meaning of productivity. It doesn't necessarily mean fast, but it does mean that we.
What does this do to culture? You're a you have musicians in the family, hang out with them a lot. And what does this do for culture and art and creativity? Like you said, what does hanging out mean in a post-quarantine world? Does it mean we're on VR looking at each other? Does it mean we go to a cafe?
You know, that's a great question. And like you said, you know, I guess one of my passion projects is the label. Daughters involved, 6 other artists, and they, you know, being heavily involved with them right now, interestingly enough, is very creative time. They have a lot of time on their hands to do more creation. They, just like we were talking about the IT side of things, there is a lot of parallel between these worlds, believe it or not. They're a lot more creative. Have a lot more time, mm-hmm. reading a lot, and coming up with some great ideas, because they have to. There's nothing else to do. There's no going out as much. There's no shows. There's no live performance. And that's actually the biggest live performance, mm-hmm. is a very important element, at least within the music side of arts, as well as many other bands, to, you know, all kinds of. Want to see that themselves. That's a very important part of our culture in general. So what happens when we're all live streaming, or like you said, doing a VR thing? It's not the same. People are doing it right now. Obviously, it's not close to the same level of connection. Performance, which reality is the true bread and butter of your art. Not publishing, it's not any of that stuff. It's really coming from their performances and getting out there, mm-hmm. with people. So that's a big that everybody's trying to figure out right now, even for you and I, as public speaking. What is Web Summit or Collision gonna look like without, you know, online?
That's, yeah, if we're not gonna go.
Yeah, a Zoom session? I mean, that's not even close to being the same. No matter how creative we get producing something, it's certainly not the same live element. So that's my mm-hmm. biggest concern. What is that going to look like for Coachella or for, you know, for the fan experience, right? And what is the fan experience going to look like through this, seeing all these platforms, Twitch, TikTok, all of these platforms, obviously, what caused them to help them. And some amazing creative stuff and ideas are coming out of them, but just does not replace their life.
Again, we could say to ourselves, like the old weirdos in us say, yeah, it'd be great to go to the dive bar and listen to the music and hang out and the whole experience. But once that becomes trivial to recreate in a VR headset, or once our homes become so familiar to us. I mean, the reason why in New York and probably most major cities you go to the bar is because you don't like your apartment. But once your apartment becomes everything, the office, the home, place where you sleep and eat and everything, you're going to be less inclined. And I think I've spoken to bars and restaurants, and they're already noticing that the millennials and younger folks just don't want to go in. What's the value of the real? What's the value of the physical in that sort of situation?
Well, that's that remains to be seen. I mean, psychologically speaking, looking at Japan as a culture, where they already had issues when it came to relationships, Korea, South Korea. These type of questions are pretty interesting with what technology is doing. You know, what the world surrounding us is going to allow us to. Because I think that's a lot of the arguments and issues that have been brought to life by the things like Snowden, Assange, the like, are going to be by many people accepted as, well, that has to be given up in the name of health, in the name of we can't let this happen. That's, you know, through, you know, I had an interesting conversation with a lady back in Estonia about a year and a half ago at finance conference, and we were talking about, you know, like using the word resilient, right? We build more resilient systems to it. And she used a word that I was not expecting to hear. She said, resilience comes from hate. And I was like, that's kind of a strong way to put it. But she said, yeah, you know, we build more resilient weapons, systems, you name it, based on the fact that we hate news. And we hated that situation, and we hated those people. And so you build a resilience, and even in, you know, the world of medicine and what's happened with the virus, right? Build resilience. Certainly look at something that I don't want to, and I hated that experience. And, you know, we are going to have, we're just, as mankind has always been, I'm sure that, you know, for the last 10 years, governments and research facilities like around the world have been doing research on, doing, you know, running scenarios and the like. But did we fund them appropriately? Did we implement any of the things that were saying? Probably not, because we felt it wouldn't be necessary. Then something like that happens, we'll see a lot more money going to those types of things. And, you know, like I said, then you're just going to think that's the concern to a degree, is that we must all now, of course, almost on a global scale, have post-corona, have these discussions about what is data privacy, what is, you know, digital identity, how is that all going to work, right? Because it's important. So, to your point, on the consumption of content, music, and the arts and culture, is I believe it will have impact on that. That we're going to, you know, in the name of humanity, that we're going to forego certain things that in the physical world up to this date we would not normally.
What does the world look like in 20 years? Is there more technology around us, less? Is it hidden?
I mean, I think there's no question that there's more technology around us now. I think there's no question that it's more like the kind of things we've seen. I say that because, you know, a very interesting story. How much time do we have here, John?
We got about another 10 minutes if you want it.
Okay, cool. So, you know, one of the interesting stories I'll tell you was a few years ago, associated to your question of what does it look like, was with a gentleman. I was involved in a thing with the Science and Entertainment Exchange, which is part of the National Academy of Sciences, and they basically paired up a filmmaker with a scientist. And they took four different scientists from completely different areas, and they paired them with this filmmaker. And I worked with a filmmaker to come up with, you know, we talked about a lot of ideas. This guy was in the reality space. And so, you know, one of them was that he had some lady that came to him once and wanted her to film a reality show about her because she believed that she was under the influence of an implant, that an implant had been put on her, and that she was controlled by it. And, you know, that was one of the ideas thrown out. And we went with that idea because in the future, and not so far in the future. It's being used now on the military for PTSD and things like that. Instead of a drug, it's an implant. And so, you know, we did this little project. It was an 8-minute film. Afterwards, you know, we did a session with the director and myself, and I did a talk. And then after that, there was a party, and this older gentleman came up to me and said, you know, I really enjoyed your talk and the way the project came out and so on and so forth. And I am I'm the founder of the Science and Entertainment Exchange. And up until that time, I really was like, what? Science and Entertainment? I didn't quite understand what this organization was or did too well. So, you know, I said, you know, I have a question. Like, so why? Why did you find this organization? Are you a scientist with a background? And so on. And he said, no, I did this because my daughter, interestingly enough, had a health issue. One that there was no cure for. And while I was, you know, blessed enough to have the money to hire the best doctors and scientists, the only solution looked like it lied in stem cells. Time, I'm guessing this is in the 80s, early 90s, stem cell research was banned by the U.S. government. And while he tried, this is as he's telling me the story, as he tried every possible way to get these scientists and doctors connected to government resources that could change these laws or allow for research to take place, they wouldn't even take their calls.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, but you know whose call they would take? I said, oh, who? And he said, mine. I said, why yours? Why would they take your call? And he said to me, oh, because my name is David Zucker, and I direct the movie Airplane. And I laughed. And I was like, no way, dude. You directed Airplane? I love that movie. And he said, yeah, so my point to you is that you're in an interesting position because you understand technology. But now you also understand and are involved in entertainment. And what you have to know is that people think that art imitates life. But the truth is life will imitate art.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the ability for us to, you know, create something on screen that looks like it could work, or it could happen, that by itself creates that to happen. Then those kids become scientists, and those influences that you see through film and television influence what the future will look like because they are the ideas of what a future might look like.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it look like in 20 years? Right now is very much going to be defined by the things we've already seen, I think, in movies, and just how much technology is going to be surrounding us, you know, as far as it's going to be in our eyes, is it as an implant, and all of these different things remain to be seen. But in the name of health and humanity, I believe that we are headed in that direction.
Hmm. All right, Ralph, where can people find out more about what you're working on?
You can go to my website, theethicalhacker.net, or Siguru is a project I've been working on for the last 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And also, check out Manifestus, on YouTube, which is my, or our label projects, music stuff. So all fun stuff.
All right. This has been Technotopia. Thank you, Ralph, for joining. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you, John. Always a pleasure.
Technotopia, we'll see you next week. Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com.